You are listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla Darroche. Today, we're going to be talking about culverts. We have Will Frost, the habitat biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, with us here today, and Blythe Brown, programs coordinator with the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District. So, what is a fish passage? Why don't you answer that, Will, since we have you on the spot now?
Well, let's go with a culvert that provides fish passage. Many culverts on Kodiak, I think the ADF&G has documented on the road system at least about 150 that have been surveyed and have been determined. About 10% of those are actually culverts that will pass fish freely. So the rest of them are culverts that are either too small in diameter or too steep or failed or for whatever reason don't allow either juvenile fish or adult fish to freely move through those culverts upstream or downstream. And so a fish-friendly culvert, when we replace culverts, that's a culvert that's usually, you know, say a stream is 10 feet wide. Well, that culvert's going to be at least, you know, maybe 15 feet wide. We try to oversize the culvert. And that also helps move the water through during a flood event and keeps the culvert from backing up maybe and flooding the road. But also that culvert's usually at the gradient of the stream. You know, if the stream gradient's like 3%, the culvert should be about 3%. And also the culvert usually has some substrate in it, the gravel or something, that helps mimic a real stream within the culvert. So we try to design culverts that basically, to the fish, it feels like they're going through, up the natural channel. So that's, in a nutshell, what a fish-friendly culvert.
And while we'll cut, go ahead.
So what happened with the Lake Orban culverts is there were several culverts in the watershed that were determined to be not fish-friendly. And we received funding to start fixing the problem. So we started at the downstream end. We replaced a culvert on private property first, kind of a little test for us because I had never worked with culverts and for some of the local contractors. And that was a success. And so we worked our way up the channel. And the two that you visited were on Bell's Flats Road and the one right at the outlet of Lake Orban. So those were our second and third culverts. One analogy I like for the size of the culverts is, Will just mentioned, the width of the stream and the width of the culvert coinciding. If you put your thumb over the front of a hose, the end of a hose, and the water squirts out fast, that's why you don't want the small culverts.
That's a good example. And the two culverts that I saw, I think you mentioned before that they were increased the size.
The originals in those two locations were only 3 foot wide. The ones we replaced them with 7 foot wide culverts.
And why was that necessary?
The originals were too small. And Will can talk about they designed the fish passage to
essentially mimic the natural stream channel.
But for a juvenile coho, correct?
Oh, yeah. We use there's what's called a design fish, and that's a 55-millimeter juvenile coho, which is maybe 3-inch fish. So
an adult fish may have been able to get through the old culverts, and adult fish did get into through the old culverts because we did observe coho in Lake Orban. But the juveniles would not have been able to make it through because as you put your finger over the end of the hose, the water pressure is just too strong, and so those juvenile cohos couldn't make it through the culverts.
Yeah, could you talk a little bit more about the life cycle of the fish and how strong they are and what kind of currents they'd be able to make it through? Does the size of the culvert make a difference, the water pressure going through that culvert, for instance?
Yeah, if it's too narrow, especially for juvenile fish, they just can't swim against that the velocity of that current in the culvert. They have, there's what's called a burst feed for, you know, fish, and essentially beyond 20 seconds that fish is going to get tired and it just can't swim any longer and it's just going to get washed out of the pipe. So if the diameter of the pipe is just too small, they just are unable to make it through that pipe. Even at, you know, sometimes at very low flows, they'll make it through a very small pipe, but typically during typical seasonal events, they're just unable to make it through. And plus, because of the small diameter of a lot of these culverts that were installed years ago, there's a scour hole that forms at the outlet of the pipe, and then the pipe becomes perched. You know, it's basically elevated in the air. You know, sometimes it's, you know, 3 feet or so, and, you know, it's just another barrier that the fish can't make it through.
All right. And have we been talking about coho salmon exclusively, or are there other kinds of salmon that will make it through?
Coho is kind of the more common species that we see around Kodiak. But, yeah, we have Lake Orban is documented, I believe, just for coho salmon. But I know that chum salmon and pink salmon have been seen in that system. You know, it's a tributary to the Russian River, so they're there. And also anadromous Dolly Varden or resident Dolly Varden, resident Dolly Varden also are present in all these systems around Kodiak.
Can we talk a little bit about salmon and the life cycle as far as when do they come to the creek, when do they leave the creek, everything related to that, and where culverts play in?
Well, the general life cycle of, you know, anadromous salmon around Kodiak, many streams, depending on what part of the island you're on, or a fog neck or any other islands in the area, are all a little different, the run timing. But for coho, generally depending on the time of the year, how severe the winter is, the eggs will hatch out maybe February, March, maybe into April if it's a long season or a long winter. I've seen juvenile pink salmon out in Chiniac coming out of the gravel when I was doing some electrofishing work in June, which is pretty late. That was during a severe winter, at the end of a severe winter. So then they go out to the ocean, and depending on the species, they'll go out there for, you know, if it's, you know, a year or two, depending if it's a pink salmon or even a Chinook salmon or king salmon, you know, up to, you know, 3 or 4 years maybe. Then come back and then spawn with a Pacific salmon. They'll just come back, spawn, and die. It, you know, steelhead or anadromous Dolly Varden might spawn a number of times, though. You know, do the cycle over.
Will they come to the same spot?
Generally, you can say yes, but they do stray. So, you know, there are systems that I used to work for the Forest Service, and just a situation out on Knight Island, we put a steep pass, a ladder in a system that had no fish in it because of the barrier. We put a ladder in, and within 2 years, the lake was colonized with coho salmon, pink salmon, and anadromous Dolly Varden. So they strayed in there on their own.
Did you say you had been doing some electrofishing?
Yeah, for about five to six years, I've had a couple of grants through the Alaska Sustainable Salmon Fund, which is federal money that goes to the state, and I've applied for grants to do electrofishing, which is using a little unit on your back, and it stuns the fish. It doesn't kill them, the juvenile fish. You don't shock adult fish, but it stuns the juvenile fish, and they just float up for, you know, 15 seconds, and you can net them up and then ID them and then put them back in the water. But I've worked with the timber operators in Chiniac. I've worked with the timber owners on a fog neck for about 5 years doing surveys prior to timber harvest so we can figure out the streams that do have fish and find out where the barriers are. And then under state law, the Forest Practices Act. Forest Practices Act, the timber operators, the landowners are required to give a 66-foot buffer along the streams that have salmon for protecting the riparian habitat.
Have you discovered anything about the salmon surrounding Lake Orban using electrofishing?
Last year I had another grant with the Kodiak Island Borough. That was a two-year grant that just finished this year, and I was mapping all the borough lands using helicopter for remote area access and then on the road system. And my partner and I, We did sample above the culvert that Blythe's been working on getting replaced, and determined juvenile coho salmon are present in that little stream, and we've basically went to the headwaters up into a natural barrier and found coho up in there using electrofishing technique. There was a barrier because of at the outlet of an old beaver dam years ago. There was some debris that was placed at the outlet of that beaver dam that is blocking fish passage, and we're hopefully going to, when that culvert's replaced, we're going to get that debris pulled out of the creek too.
Is this all dependent on grants coming in?
The work is definitely dependent on funding coming in. We do have funding right now. The surveyors you met out at Lake Orban, that funding is from Fish and Wildlife Service to survey and design for some culverts, and we're still waiting and hoping for funding to come in to actually replace the culverts. All of our projects are partnered with as many different entities as we can get. It makes it a little more successful if everybody's in on the same picture. So the original Lake Orban culverts, we did partner and got a little bit of funding from Alaska Department of Fish and Game. We are partnering with the borough. The ones out there in Lake Orban are on borough land. We got a little bit of funding from...
Well, there's a whole list here.
Yeah, I do have a whole list.
It seems like everyone in town has contributed some money.
Money or in-kind services. In-kind services are often important to the Women's Bay Fire Department and the Women's Bay Road Service Area both contributed in-kind. When we replaced the first culvert, the fire department came and helped us dewater the area so we could do the construction.
Yeah, I remember visiting one of the culverts by Lake Orban, and you mentioned that it's on borough land, and luckily for the culvert, it is going to be funded in part by borough funds. And so they contracted with this surveying company from, what was it, Oregon, Washington?
I don't know the exact...
Oregon.
They're from that particular... surveyor was from Oregon, yes.
And
but that's a borough contract that they had existing, so we were able to work with through the borough, and they hired the surveyors to come work.
And they do specific work with rivers and creeks and waterways, it seems.
It is a specialized business. When we put out the RFP, the request for proposals for the original fish passage culvert replacements, one of the requirements is that they have experience with fish passage culverts. Because as you can imagine, just putting in a culvert in your driveway or another culvert through a road that is not required to pass fish is a lot different than putting in a culvert that needs to be of the size and the dimension. And as Will was saying, the slope, there are a lot of issues that need to go into placing these culverts properly so that they don't blow out in the future, or the material that's put in the bottom of the culvert to mimic the stream bottom, if the culvert's not placed or sized properly, there's the possibility that it'll all just get washed right out, and then you're left with an empty culvert again that's not doing what you need it to do.
And that culvert was clearly worn and torn. It was in need of, it is in need of the replacement. How did, is it the water that has kind of like tethered the edges of the pipe?
Oh, the substrate that's being washed through over the, you know, that pipe off like Orban may have been in there since the 50s or something.
Whoa.
You know, a lot of the pipes that we see on the Buskin watershed especially are World War II era. A lot of those are wood-stave pipes that were made out of redwood from California and then they're full of creosote. And so anyway, a lot of those pipes are very old, but
got a call-in question.
We got a calling question. Well, this is exciting. It's the first.
My anyway, they get worn because of all, generally the steel pipes because of the substrate that's going through them. It just wears them out.
I'm going to continue on that. But right now, the calling question is, why does the velocity of the water matter if the juvenile fish are going downstream?
Not so much going downstream. So if an adult fish does make it through the pipe, goes upstream, spawns, and then the juvenile fish are going to go downstream, you know, after a year or so, you know, spending their time in the water, in this fresh water, that's not such a problem. It's the juvenile fish trying to go upstream to better habitat. Say, you know, there's a nice beaver pond or nice wetland complex upstream, and a juvenile coho is going to try and get to that because that's just the habitat they like. You know, there's a lot of cover, maybe a little warmer water for growth and more food. So if they're trying to get upstream, it's, you know, that's the issue, is trying to get upstream, not so much downstream.
The juveniles, they'll hang out in the creek before they go out to the ocean. They don't immediately hatch and head downstream. So they need a resident area to be able to swim up and down, or as Will says, go to more preferred habitat.
Well, thank you to that listener for that question. If anyone else would like to ask a question, we have call a number of 486-3181. So if any listeners have any questions they would like to ask Blythe Brown and Will Frost, please do call in at 486-3181. We have 10 more minutes for your curiosity. So what we were talking about before was when some of these culverts were installed, you said they were installed during World War II, and some of them were?
Well, a lot of them were out in Chiniac. I think some of those roads out there were built during World War II for defense purposes. And, you know, you think about 1940, I think the air base or the Coast Guard, well, it was Navy base at the time, was built around 1939-40, during the build-up to the war. People weren't thinking about, you know, oh, we'd have to make these fish-friendly culverts. It was, you know, wartime. It was like, get these things in and let's, you know, move on. And so they were just put in as quick as they could, so nobody was really thinking about that. And it's only been, you know, in the last 15, 20 years that people have really started to go, hey, wait a minute, these culverts are causing a problem. We have all this good habitat upstream that is being blocked by some of these culverts. So as they wear out, like DOT culverts, Department of Transportation culverts, we have an agreement with them. As they wear out, and if there's fish there, they agree to replace them with fish-friendly culverts. And the same with the Coast Guard is helping us do the same thing here in Kodiak.
What? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Blythe.
It's actually pretty exciting with the Coast Guard. In 2012, three culverts above Buskin Lake were just removed. Some of these, the culverts that were put in during the war, are on roads that aren't needed anymore. So if we can just pull out the culvert and not replace it with a new culvert, that's even better than replacing it with a fish-friendly culvert.
What makes a culvert fish-friendly?
Well, like we were saying earlier, having the size of the culvert big enough to mimic the stream, a natural stream channel, and having the substrate in it and making sure it's not too steep. If it is in a steep channel, they often get designed with baffles inside the culvert that help creating little pools that help the fish get up through the baffles, or baffles actually hold the substrate if it's steep so that material doesn't wash out. And recently on the Coast Guard side, there's about, I think, 9 culverts that are on old abandoned roads, and they've been helping us just by removing those pipes. And they started on a number of them on the Buskin drainage about a month ago, and I think we have like 3 out now and out of the 9, and they're going to keep working on it all winter as, you know, time allows, and they don't have to do other work with snow plowing and that type of thing. And we'll get those things out of there, hopefully by next summer.
Yeah, what is the necessary timeline on some of these culverts? Or is there no necessary timeline?
Well, generally there's a work window when doing any kind of in-water work that you don't want to, you know, be, if you're building a bridge or something, you don't want to be driving piles when there's adult fish or juvenile fish present in a stream because that can harm the fish. So generally, middle of summer, May to mid-July is typically when the smolt have left the river and the adult fish haven't shown back up. So that's kind of the best time. But it's dependent on each system. So we're pretty fish and game's pretty flexible about when we would allow somebody to do in-stream work. And, you know, this with the removal of the culverts, it's pretty low-tech. So we're not really worried about working in this time of year. And it's call it for the greater good. You might if you're working in the stream a little bit and you have a little bit of mud, you know, because you're pulling a culvert out, it's only for a very brief time and you really shouldn't be hurting the fish at all. So.
And one of the questions that occurred to me when I was at the culvert, one of the culverts by Lake Orban, is I saw these long grasses just flowing in the creek at the entrances of the culvert. Is there a certain kind of vegetation that's appropriate for creeks to replant?
Well, anything that's native. I mean, I'll let Blythe talk about any invasive plants that we don't want around, but, yeah, the native species are always important for, you know, cover for fish and providing nutrients and food for the fish. So,
I remember when we were out there at Lake Orban, we were probably where you were looking at the grass. There was some comment from some of the public in the past about, look at all that brush in the creek. Look at all those logs that are in the creek. Why can't we clean that out? But some of that brush and those logs are actually pretty important for a healthy riparian system. The creeks need the woody material. The fish need the cover that the brush and the logs provide, and the grass, the long grass you're talking about.
For shade
and protection from predators and other issues.
Hmm. So it looks like we have just a couple of minutes to wrap up. So why don't we talk about some of the future projects or the future culverts where this project might grow or this ongoing maintenance might go from here?
We're looking at the Buskin watershed right now. We have some surveyors out testing a couple of culvert areas. They're doing some soil drilling today, to test the soils underneath some potential sites. And once those culverts have been assessed and surveyed and designed and new passages engineered, if we get more funding, then we'll be looking to replace several culverts in the Buskin watershed. And the Buskin being such an important watershed for Kodiak area, recreational, subsistence, commercial fishing, it's our dinner plate. So we're looking to improve the whole Buskin watershed with some more fish-friendly crossings.
And on top of that, the Department of Transportation has a few projects. I think for next summer that there's a pipe out in Chiniac that they're looking to replace. I think they have some funding secured for that, and they'll be applying for permits application or getting a permit to do that work next summer. I don't really know the milepost number, but there's a fairly substantial stream out there in the Chiniac area that's going to be replaced.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, both of you.